Almost lost it on that song. Like I was saying, there is a lot of energy in this place. I can feel it flowing through my body. You know that in Genesis, where it says, let us, you notice that God is plural. And that's amazing. And David, the psalmist, said these words, I will be glad when they say, let us go in to the house of the Lord. And when speakers like Rokas gets up without notes, we are allowing that force to come in to the house of the Lord.
Yeah.
And to flow out. And it's powerful.
Yes.
It's powerful. So I intended not to come here with notes, just to give out of what God's put in me the last 10 years. This is my first speaking engagement in 10 years. Did you know that? I spoke just a little bit. I spoke just a little bit at Gary's house in September, and I said to the Lord, I said, I haven't been to church in 10 years. I've gone through hell and back and studied and read and experienced and floated out of my body and vibrated in bed at night and had visitations from purple-gowned people and just a wide variety of odd things. And I said, why is this happening? I mean, am I just supposed to experience these things and write a book, or what's the deal? And I said, please give me an idea of where I'm going. Please give me either a speaking engagement or something. And a couple of months later, I got an invitation from Lynn. And then the next week, I got an invitation from do y'all know what UR is? Universal Reconciliation or Universal Rec. They called me and asked me to come and speak at their conference in Dallas. And the man that asked me said there's three types of people that attend those conferences. And the first group is those that are thinking there just might be other people than them going to heaven. There's people that think that, oh yeah, there's lots of people going to heaven. And he said, then there's people like you, Barb, that have left the mothership. And he said, I just give you complete liberty and latitude to say whatever you want to. So I plan on doing the same thing. Although they asked me what I would be speaking on, and I had to give a paragraph. And so I told them what the title of my book is going to be. And the title of the book, I've got 9 chapters written. And it's going to be called My Journey Out of Christianity and Into Christ. That might shake up some people. But you know, it's true. It's happening to all of us. These religious paradigms and boxes that we've had God in and Jesus in are changing, breaking, busting open. A few years ago, I was challenged by God. And I heard a scripture. And the scripture was Jesus speaking, and he said, it's necessary and expedient that I go away. For if I go away, I'll send the Comforter to you. And I said, God, what does that mean? Because I know it's not history. It's mystery. It's not something that happened. It's something that is happening.
Yes.
And so what I had to do was I laid everything down. I said, I want to know the mystery. And I had a lot of preconceived ideas about God. I'd been searching and hungry and attending my church and involved in ministry, deliverance ministry, for the better part of the 90s. I spoke and traveled and saw more demons come out of people and more healing. And I mean, it was amazing, amazing times, all for a purpose, but I had to lay it all down. You know, there comes a time as a parent, if your child is asking for gas money or grocery money, or maybe they got a ticket or two that they can't pay, you know, we bail them out. We help them along. But then there comes a time when the parent says, that's enough. It's time for you to do for yourself. And I think that's what's happening to us as we would look to God for healing. God, please, heal me. But for me, I don't know about you, there was a time when it seemed like the prayers fell on deaf ears. And he no longer moved when I asked him to, or when I expected him to, or when I lay hands on somebody. It no longer worked. You know what I mean? And so I was forced to let everything go. And I literally let everything go. And you know, we're entering into a new age. We're coming out of the Piscean age, which is the symbol of the ministry of Jesus. And we're entering into the age of Aquarius. And Jesus said, lo, I will be with you unto the end of the age. And that age is passing. And the historical Jesus is passing away as well. We're entering into something completely new and different. And we've not been this way before. We've not been in this way before. We're entering into mysterious times that's going to require our intuitive nature, our discernment to kick in. We're being pushed out of the nest and forced to fly. Let me give you an example of something that happened to me. It was about 14 months ago, and I was asked to go to a hospital, the same rehab hospital that my son was in. And there was a man in the hospital there who had a terrible motorcycle accident. And he's literally missing a good portion of his brain and his skull. And as he laid there in his hospital bed, and we walked into his room, his bed was facing this way, and the door was this way, and I came walking in, and I had the most unusual experience. And as I walked around the bed, this was a 6'4" tall man, probably about 190, 200 pounds, kind of long and lanky man. Just had been married and had a newborn baby and was laying in a vegetative state. And as I walked around the bed, I looked into his eyes and something mysterious happened to me. I moved into a place of deep appreciation for what he was experiencing. Because I knew somewhere in my heart that his experience was mine. That he had agreed from before the foundation of the world to have this experience. And as I moved into deep appreciation, it was all I could do. And I know this sounds strange, but it was all I could do from getting down on my knees and just bowing down before this I am. And thanking him for this experience. I looked deep into his eyes and I just smiled. But I held that appreciative thought in my heart. And when we left and got into the elevator, a friend of mine just wept and wept and wept. And it was so strange to me to look at her and to see her sorrow. And I looked into her eyes and I said, Margaret, he chose this. that's okay. There's a purpose for all human suffering because it produces something deep in the earth. It's a mystery. A mystery. A year later, hadn't heard from this couple that we went to go see. They don't live in town. But I heard something about this young man. One day he woke up. It was a year to the day of his accident. He woke up, got out of bed, walked down to the nurse's station, asked for a cell phone, called his father, said, "Daddy, I love you." This is a mystery. If we can look at our struggle and embrace and honor the path, and we cease to judge the experience of ourself and another as being either good or evil,
yes,
we're going to transcend this dimension.
Yes.
Because it's the human frequency of the mind that judges, that causes whatever we're looking at to flourish, whether it's good or evil. If we can move into a place of deep appreciation and understand that this being has experienced something for us, for the cause of the consciousness of the planet, then we're going to begin to transcend and ascend this dimensional level. So something I want to say to you, Danny, as one who was under the influence of meth in a hospital, unbeknownst to me, I don't know how it got into my body, but I tested positive for it, and I was going through a bad time. But I just want to say thank you. Thank you. You. Because Paul said there's a suffering in the body that was lacking and needed to be filled up. And that's our suffering. This experience come to us for the purposes of growing up the God-man.
Yes, yes.
Because the God-man needs to be fully exercised in the knowledge of good and evil. Because we're going somewhere. We're not staying where we are. Our thoughts are like an automobile. And our emotion is like gas. And when you put those two things together, you create whatever it is that you're thinking about. And I said the other night, there's a time lapse right now between thought and manifestation. But where we're headed, time is collapsing, and we're beginning to create our own reality, and we're recognizing what we're creating. Let me give you an example. My son, Chris, let me give you a little background for those that don't know this, went over to Iraq, came back without a scratch, was a crazy young man, rode a crotch rocket, and Lyle would ride with him from time to time and say, "That boy is just crazy." And Chris would say, "I'm going to kill myself on that thing, Mom." I said, "Chris, don't say that." He said, "Well, I may mess myself up, but I won't die." So November 13th, 2005, he gets on his motorcycle with my husband and my younger son on his motorcycle, and they take off for Houston to a motorcycle show. And as they're driving down the highway, Lyle tells me that Chris is looking over at him on the motorcycle, And he said the weird thing was that Chris wasn't there. And he kept on looking over at Lyle, and Lyle would look back at him and he would think, what's he doing? Why is he doing that? Because it was a long time, a long stare. And so Lyle's looking at him, and finally he goes, gives him a nod. Like, what are you doing? Chris looks at Lyle, looks straight ahead, hits the throttle, goes into the passing lane to pass a minivan, and never comes out of the lane. Never comes out of the lane. He's going 70 miles an hour, at least. And here comes a red Ford F-250 round in the corner in the oncoming lane, going 70 miles an hour. And Lyle behind him has got this fear rising up in him, thinking, get in the other lane, son. Get in the other lane, son. Get in the other lane, son. And he feels this rise up within him, and he sees this explosion happen in front of him. And he's dodging now. The chassis of Chris's motorcycle is been thrown back at him, and him and Keith are dodging motorcycle parts. And he maintains control of his motorcycle but comes to a screeching stop. And he looks over and he sees Chris about 10 feet from him on the ground in the grass. And he rolls over, he gets to Chris and he rolls him over, and he sees that he is not breathing, not bleeding. He's white with death all over his countenance. And to be graphic, he said he reminded him of a deer that had been hit by a car. His tongue was out and hanging, and he was gone. His left arm was missing, and his leg was split open from the hip down and twisted. And Lyle collapsed on Chris. And he told me he made noises that he didn't think a human being could make. He said, I wailed, Barb. He collected himself and tried to stand up and looked around and looked down at Chris and collapsed again. This time trying to gather him up in his arms and continuing to make this groan, this noise. He let him go again and stood up and recognized that he was gone. He heard a woman running, yelling at him, screaming, saying, I'm an EMT, I'm an EMT. And he said, it's too late. He's gone. We need an ambulance. And she said, sir, he's not dead. And Lyle jerked to turn and look, and Chris had the color of life returning back in his face. He was gasping for breath and beginning to writhe in pain. There was not one, but three off-duty EMTs that just so happened to be right there, and a nurse. They gathered up his arm, had tourniquets and put on his limbs, stopped the bleeding, and toted him off to the top trauma center in the Southwest. If any of you know who Dr. Red Duke is, he's the man that created and brought together the Flight for Life helicopter. So that's how Chris got there. And Lyle rode to the hospital with Keith on their motorcycles, called me first and said, Chris put his bike down. said, is he all right? He said, oh yeah, he's fine. It looks like he might need some surgery on his leg, though. His leg's broken. I said, all right. I picked up his fiance and headed on down to Houston. And I told his fiance on the way there, I said, you know, Lyle would only lie to me about one thing. I said, so you need to prepare yourself. And she said, okay. We got to the hospital, and you have to realize they took a completely different route than I did to get to the hospital, Lyle and Keith did. But somehow we got there at exactly the same time, and he stopped me just as I was going in to see Chris before surgery to prepare me. And he said, darling, it's a little worse than what I told you. And his legs buckled. And I thought, oh God. And he told me that his arm had come off at the accident and that he was in pretty bad shape. And Lyle had forgotten, but several months prior, he had had a vision of Chris without limbs. And he didn't wake me up when this happened in the middle of the night. But the second time it happened, he woke me up. Because it happened a few times in a row. And so I said, baby, your dreams. So isn't it interesting that you're prepared by these things? And I'm not sure about how time works. I know that things happen concurrently, and there really isn't a past or a future. But somehow, some way, he was given that information ahead of time. So we get to the emergency room, the surgical ward, and he kisses his fiance and tells me he loves me. And he's taken into surgery. Now, mind you, the impact was 140 miles an hour at least, and he wasn't wearing a helmet. But he's doing great. Yeah. I wanted to lighten the mood a little bit there. He went skydiving a few weeks back. So, crazy. But while I was in the emergency room, you know, they came and they said his blood pressure is 50 over 20. He's in trouble. We need to take his leg. And the doctor came and squatted down in front of me to ask for permission. I was sitting on the floor. There was so many people there, and it was so crowded. And I just said, go. I mean, there was no question in my mind that, you know, they needed to do what it took to save his life. And after the doctor got up to leave, I was in the emergency waiting room, and I was walking around in circles. And this is you kind of go to a funny place if you've had trauma in your life. I left my body and went up here somewhere. That's all I know how to say. But I was walking around in my body, and I was trying to think of how he was going to convalesce. I wasn't thinking whether he was going to make it through the surgery or not. How is he going to convalesce? You know, Lynn, how is he going to hold a crutch to walk when he doesn't have an arm? And so I was trying to figure out what was going to happen to him. What would his life be like? Someone so full of life. And just when I got to this place of almost getting hysterical, and I was up here floating around somewhere in my mind, I heard the voice of the Lord speak to me. And he said, Barbara, he chose this. And so did you. And I did what any mother would do. I said, you know, why would I choose that? Why would he choose that? I didn't get it. And he continued to speak and say, but from before the foundation of the world, when I made known to him the mystery of my will. And you said, here I am. He said, here I am, send me. So we had a pretty long stay in the hospital, but relatively short considering his injuries. He was out in 5.5 weeks. And the young man is just amazing. He is so accepting. As a matter of fact, when he came out of his delirium, he looked at Lyle and looked down at his missing limbs and said, so this is the way it is. And Lyle said, yes, son. And that's it. That's it. So we thought we needed to get him to a psychiatrist or something, because how could somebody be so okay with that? Yet he was, truly, and happy. A happy guy. How many of y'all have seen The Secret Behind the Secret by Esther and Jerry Hicks? Esther channels Abraham. Well, we watch The Secret Behind the Secret, where we talk about how we create our own reality. And Chris struggled a little bit to begin with. Did I really create this? But then he just settled in right away and thought, well, I must have. Because he thought that what they said was true. That yes, we do create our own reality. And so he said, I wanna go see them. And so we got tickets. And Chris wakes up in the morning. We went and stayed in San Antonio at a hotel because we wanted to get a good seat. And he wakes up in the morning and says, they're going to call me up. Second. I said, really? He said, yep, I know it. I know it in my thinker. They're going to call me up. I just know it. So Jerry gets up there and he gives an introduction, and actually we got there an hour prior, and we had to sit way in the back. The seats were all taken, and I just thought in my head, I really didn't want him to be disappointed. And so Jerry gets up there, gives an introduction, and in walks Esther, and she does her typical hello, goodbye, and then she allows, I believe, all that is to speak. And so Abraham talks for a while and then begins to take questions, points to a man in the front row, talks to that man for about 10 minutes. And Abraham goes like this, all right, next question. And everybody's. And Abraham's scanning the audience. Chris jumps up. And you could have heard a pin drop as he waddled on his prosthetic leg, made his way down front. And he sat in the chair and said, well, I'm a little nervous, but I just wanted to know. I know I'm going to get my arm and leg back. I just want to know when. And there was nervous laughter in the audience. He was dead serious. And so was Abraham when they said, nothing is impossible. Nothing. They also said, the reason we chose you is because the energy that's moving around your body is moving very fast. This isn't your first go-round. You have accrued much in your vibrational escrow. And regenerating your arm and leg is only going to be a fine-tuning exercise for you. And he believes it with all of his heart. I don't know how it'll happen or when, but I know it will. I know that he is destined to manifest the next dimensional level. I know it, that I know it, that I know it. The VA has already noted bone growth three times in his left residual limb. So we wait. We'll see. But he's amazing. He's amazing. We're learning that we are manifesting our reality. Chris is learning a little bit the hard way. He came over about a month ago and was complaining bitterly that someone had come, backed into his truck, put a nice dent in his passenger tailgate, passenger side tailgate. He was angry. He likes his truck. He likes his truck neat and pretty and clean. So he stood outside with Lyle and one of our friends and really talked about it for about 15 minutes. He provided the thought and the corresponding emotion. Went home, got on the computer for about 30 minutes, got ready to go out and pick up his girlfriend, went outside. Someone had backed in the driveway and hit the other taillight. I'm telling you. And the words out of my mouth were, I just said, Chris, you got to be careful. I truly believe that he is an ascended master. That he's a prototype, as we are. That he's learning through these human experiences that we co-create our own reality. And you know, if I didn't make this clear the other night, I want to make it clear now. When I say we co-create our own reality, everything that you see around you has been created by thought. We've been placed here as immature God-men learning how to manipulate and handle matter. It's a playground of sorts. But this God-man has to experience everything to become fully exercised in the knowledge of everything good and evil. And we're to transcend that portion of us that judges, that has an ego. That portion of us that has an ego needs to submit to that which is greater because of where we're going and where we're headed. Where we're headed, we can't have ego, and the power that is destined for the sons of God will not be given to someone who will create out of ego or greed. It's not going to happen. We'll be resisted, and we will not be allowed to progress. Therefore, laying behind the elementary principles, let us go on, and this we will do if God permit. There's a rite of passage and a permission that's given. So powerful. There are worlds that need to be filled. This planet is birthing the God-man. But it's not a certain sector of people. It's not the ones that are born again or saved. We all know that. But our whole planet is the Son of God. And beings from all over the multiverse watch and wait to see the manifestation of the sons of God. They watch and they wait. We are a peculiar people. You know, when the scripture says that the Christ was born of a virgin, if you've heard Lynn's teaching, you know that we're the virgin. Because never before has spirit penetrated biology. Never before. We're a unique creation. We are a synergy. We are a cooperation between biology and spirit. And we have a purpose, and it is to co-create worlds without end. Now, what we've been doing in the earth up until now is a lot of procreating. And that is a physical picture of what is supposed to take place in the spiritual dimension. We've been relating to one another from our lower chakras. But now, we're going to begin to co-create from the waist up. There are relationships forming. And it's going to be a new experience to relate on a level, to cause something to come forth in the other where both polarities of male and female are within one body. And when I say both polarities, that's the male aspect of God and the female aspect of the soul. And they come together and they form something called a light body or a Merkaba. Jesus was asked, why don't your disciples fast? John's disciples fast. Why don't yours? And Jesus said, why should they fast when the bridegroom is with them? He didn't say the groom. He said the bridegroom. Because both components of that male and female energy had come to union in his body. And when that happens, another dimension manifests. So much so that everyone around him could step into that dimension and they could do the things that he did. But Jesus said, but there'll come a time when the bridegroom is taken. And then they will fast. But what was left at this low point in human culture was a pattern. And the pattern is that that female side of us begin to yield as a bride to a groom, to lay down that self-life, that egoic identity in favor of that greater counterpart. And that's the maturing of the seed. It's just, I heard it put this way, I believe it was at Gary's. It's that full stalk, that mature stalk of seed in the wheat, that when it gets so fully laden with seed, it begins to bow. And that's how you can tell the difference between a tear, which is the soul, an ego, and the God-man. It begins to yield. This is where we're going. Union is happening in our bodies. That which we have practiced with one another in marriage, male and female relationships, that's just been a symbol and a picture of a spiritual reality. I want to say this too. I had a friend call me a while back. And I said, why don't you come on up and have some fellowship with us? There's some things I want to talk to you about. Some things that I'm learning. And she said, no, I can't come up. I said, why not? She said, Barb, I've fallen in love. And this is a woman who has been single for 25 years. And I said, that's awesome. I'm so happy for you. She said, well, don't be too happy because I've fallen in love with another woman. These are the words that came out of my mouth. So I don't care. I love you, and I want to see you. She said, I knew you would say that. I wanted to say, I didn't. But I had to come to terms with that, because I used to try and cast demons out of people that were gay. And so all of a sudden now, I had no judgment. It was gone.
Yes.
And so I had to ask, all that is, what's happening to me? Why do I feel this way? It became a non-issue. I didn't care. And then I began to see that there are those that are walking the earth today who are a walking demonstration for us. They are reflecting our own spiritual condition in a physical way so that we can see what we need to do. And this physical condition is that soul-to-soul coupling, female-to-female or male-to-male, will not produce offspring. So when I look at them, they're reflecting back to me my own condition. Do you get that? And so these people who have agreed to come, not know who they are, experience all of the conflict and the hurt and the pain and the drama and the trauma and the confusion and the suicidal thoughts, rejection, have agreed to come to display a mystery to us. That set me free. It set me free. So now here I am. I somehow let Jesus go. I'm reading books that I used to burn on my barbecue. Truthfully. And one day I said, where am I? Where do I fit? I don't know what anything means anymore. I've lost my vocabulary. I don't know what saved means. I mean, totally, I was completely rent. And I had a vision. And I was sitting in my chair and it completely overtook me. And the vision was this huge sphere. It was endless, but it was still a sphere. And in the middle of the sphere was written the word Christ. And it was such a wonderful place to be. I'm thinking, am I in here? Am I still okay with you, God? Because I'm reading about reincarnation and channeled material and let Jesus go and all this other stuff. And I saw a little tiny bubble on the bottom of this huge sphere. And he pointed to it and he said, "You're not in there anymore." I said, "But what is that?" He said, "That's charismatic Christianity."
Hallelujah.
And as I looked, I'm telling you, when I looked at that little bubble, all of a sudden I saw a lot of little bubbles spring up around it. There was Buddhism, Catholicism, Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses, Hindus. There was all of these different little bubbles. And I saw that we were all coming out into this broad expanse that we call Christ. I felt so good. I'm going to close with this. You know, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one will come to the Father but by me." I would have friends call and say, "What about this? You're not going to get to the Father." So I said, "What about this?" And he started to speak to me about the word Christ. And this is my understanding. I know that there's other understandings, but this is just what he told me that day. That if you had some anointing oil in here, and Connie, you came up here, and I began to massage it in to your shoulders, in your back, in your hands. You know, the word anoint in Hebrew means to press or to rub in. And what is oil a symbol of? So if I rubbed this oil into Connie's body, could I get that out?
No.
Or has it become one with her? This mystery of union, when we yield to all that is, joins with us. And I think it's from the inside out.
It is.
As that seed comes to maturity. And he becomes one with us so much that we're inseparable. That's being anointed. And that is the Christ. So I don't care if you're Buddhist. You lay down the self-life and submit to all that is. Guess what? You're finding your way to the Father. There is no other way. Father's in here. The kingdom, the next dimensional level, it's all in here. And the road is narrow because all it is unconditional love, where we lay down the self-life like our pattern, Jesus Christ, and allow that which is greater than us to become inseparable from who we are. That's where we're going. That's where we're going. So I had my answer. I had my answer. That's it.